tablet on the desk.
Let's start with your initial examination.
Narang looked over the notes she'd taken during the interview. As with any good investigator, Kemp had avoided injecting speculation into his documentation. However, he'd been more willing to open up in a one-on-one interview, especially once it was understood that there would be no quoting out of context. The event was frightening in its simplicity. This had all the feel of a deliberate trap, but by humans or something else? The changes to Ivan Pritchard seemed impossible, but that assumed she took all descriptions at face value. There was always the possibility of exaggeration, of misremembering, of outright confabulation. On the other hand, she'd seen the Chrome Man. That would be hard to fake. She pulled up the intercom app and buzzed Nakamura. He popped up within seconds in a video window.
Haruki, what do we have in terms of safety procedures?
The usual. Negative pressure, sterilization of air and recirculation, isolation suits.
Narang shook her head.
Not going to be enough. We're going to have to enforce physical isolation as well. No one goes into the crew area at all.
But how will we get samples, do examinations?
We can ask the Navy engineers for some custom work in that area.
Narang thought for a moment.
And I'm sure BSL-4 containment procedures will contain some descriptions of processes, even if only on paper. Contact Lakonin and see if she can put someone on it. We need to up our game.
Nakamura nodded and ended the connection. Narang sat back and stared at the ceiling. She was beginning to realize that despite the bizarre nature of this assignment, she'd still unconsciously treated it like a biological outbreak. That would have to change. 30. Quarantine.
Dear Judy, we have arrived at LaGrange 4 and are now under quarantine. I'm so sorry things are working out this way. It seems like nothing good comes to us without some corresponding karmic kick in the crotch just to make sure we don't get uppity. I still don't have any more information, but the ICDC is involved, and if they can't pull a rabbit out of a hat, no one can. I will do everything I can to try to come out of this okay, but I won't do anything that might risk you or our children. I guess the good news is that we will be rich. I can be happy knowing that you and the kids will be more than okay for the rest of your lives. But remember what I said about getting away as quickly as possible. I'm sorry. I know I'm sounding morose, but that's me, right? Never able to lie, even to reassure you. Whatever happens, I love you, babe. Give the kids a hug for me. Ivan.
Ivan stared at the email for a few moments.
Yeah, never able to lie. I seem to be getting a lot better at that lately.
Grimacing at the thought, he pressed send. He had no doubt that his correspondence was being examined and would be censored or blocked if he said too much. Not that he would. He understood panic and the negative effects. He also understood guilt by association and didn't want his family painted with that brush. If things got out, he didn't want a data trail from the infection to his family. He was interrupted by the arrival of a doctor at the window.
Hello, Mr. Pritchard.
Hi, Dr. Narang, right? What's up?
We're blowing through the nanite samples that Dr. Kemp took, and we'll need a new supply soon. Obviously, you being in isolation represents a challenge. We think we've figured out a way to get what we need from you with minimal fuss or danger. We'll have to do some work on one of the other cubicles, then we'll be moving you. I just wanted to let you know because it'll be a little noisy for a while.
No prob, Doc. I'm so bored that even construction noise is a welcome addition.
Narang gave him an embarrassed smile.
You have full media access, of course, although I expect that gets old quickly. Is there anything else we can do for you?
I don't think so, Doc. I've thought about all the things I want or might ask for, and most of them are beyond your power or really bad ideas, so no. You can answer a question, though.
I'll try, Ivan.
On the subject of VID, there have been demonstrations around ICDC and UEN headquarters. You haven't released anything, have you? Do these people have any actual fuel for this?
Narang paused for a moment before responding.
Ivan, there's been no official announcement either from ICDC or the UEN, but something's gotten out. Some of the commentary is just too close to the mark. We've had to increase our online security because of the increased attention. I'm sure Admiral Moore is all over it, though.
She smiled again, nodded to him, and left before he could ask any more questions. He wasn't sure, but she might be walking a little faster than she really needed to. Was that embarrassment, or just not wanting to be around the metal man?
Welcome to my new life.
31. First looks.
Who's in the AQRI?
Narang walked up to the console where a couple of doctors sat watching the monitor. Dr. Noelia Sandoval turned in her chair.
A little guy named Sample Scraping. Bare nanites? What do they look like?
Coming up, said Nakamura in the next seat. He poked at the console and an image came up on the monitor. The advanced quantum resonance imager could scan in detail an object from the size of a full-grown human being down to the nucleus of a cell. The researchers hoped to learn if they could decode the internal workings of the nanites. Narang gasped when the image popped up on the monitor. The nanites glowed in AQRI imaging. This was their first bit of good news. If the devices showed up that clearly on AQRI scans, they'd be able to detect any infections in humans with little effort. The real-time image showed the nanites moving around slowly, looking for something to latch onto. As Chief McNeil had reported, they seemed to be ineffective against industrial glass.
Next question will be, can we kill them? Nakamura said.
Without killing the host, Narang added.
Ivan Pritchard lay, apparently relaxed, in the AQRI. Sandoval and Nakamura hovered over the panel, ready to make any required adjustments. No one was entirely sure how the AQRI would handle an entirely metal subject.
I have to reduce saturation, Sandoval said. Can't make out any detail in the glow.
In moments, the picture resolution improved. Narang stared, slack-jawed. A number of gasps behind her made it clear that all the doctors were watching.
What in the 99 hells is that?
Sandoval pointed at a spot on the display. The image on the monitor showed a complex internal structure, easily as varied and diverse as a human body, but there, all resemblance ended. Narang moved slowly closer to the monitor, squinting at the image. Then she yelped as someone stepped on her heel. Narang whirled.
Hey, everyone not on shift, take a big step back.
There were mutters that sounded like a mutiny in the making, but most of those present stepped back to the wall. Now able to concentrate on the image, Narang could only shake her head.
The report from Dr. Kemp indicated that the infection was replicating all required functions of human organs. Similar functionality doesn't mean similar morphology, apparently,
Sandoval replied. Unless, Nakamura added, having completely replaced the human tissues, the organism then reconfigured to something more efficient or desirable.
Well, sure. He probably doesn't need a spleen or kidneys, which raises the question, what does he need?
Narang looked at Sandoval.
Can we make comparisons to our own mechs? Not a hope in hell, Dr. Narang. It's like comparing a club to an autonomous drone. If you held a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what any of those structures are for. Power? Temperature control? Communications? It's anyone's guess. Absent a dissection.
Narang gave Sandoval a sharp look. If she was trying to be funny, mission not accomplished. Sandoval shrugged, unrepentant.
Kemp did some x-rays and AQRI scans on the trip in. We'll compare them with this one, see how much has changed.
She flipped off the AQRI and leaned to the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. We're done for today.
On the other side of the glass, Ivan Pritchard got up, gave the doctors a salute, and walked back to his room. Dr. Narang gestured to the image floating in the middle of the conference table.
Well, there it is. For those of you who didn't quite believe the initial reports, in which group I include myself, by the way, it seems the Mad Astra's doctor wasn't drinking or smoking something after all.
A nanite. An actual microscopic self-contained machine.
Dr. Nakamura's voice had the distracted tone of someone unwilling to spare more than minimal attention for the task of speaking. Dr. Alwyn Schulz, a physicist borrowed from Caltech, grinned unabashedly.
And self-powered. We have nothing that could do that. Not at that size.
Schulz leaned forward, then settled his rotund form more comfortably into his chair. He looked around the table, still smiling, inviting argument or commentary.
So, alien?
Schulz turned to face Narang.
Unquestionably. The Japanese are the technology leaders on this front, and they're not even close to delivering something self-contained at the micron level, never mind the data processing requirements.
Matt Siegel, the team's information systems expert, shook his head.
Same comment applies from the IT angle, Alwyn. I've no idea how you'd encode a complete computer system in that size, even without allowing room for power, I.O. systems, and whatever else.
The session appeared to be in danger of descending into a gush fest. Narang interrupted the spiral.
So, Matt, are you willing to commit to the statement that this is extraterrestrial in origin?
Mathematically, it is still possible that it's of human origin. We can't logically rule that out in the same way we can't rule out leprechauns. But realistically, no one is even close to this.
He shook his head.
If I had to, I'd bet my life on it being alien.
Step one, done.
Narang took a moment to refill her tea from the faux ceramic pot. She glanced over at the pastry tray, but the locust swarm had already ravaged it. Mostly the head locust, Samuelson.
Okay, next question, and maybe not as easy to answer. Does this seem symptomatic of some kind of attack?
Not a chance, Siegel said before anyone else could speak. He received several arch looks, for his tone as much as for his statement. Narang raised her eyebrows at Siegel, inviting him to continue.
Why set it up on some random asteroid? If you want to attack Earth, just drop the package into the atmosphere.
So why was it placed on some random asteroid?
Siegel shrugged, without comment.
Step two sort of done.
Narang looked at her tablet, at the third question.
Does the incident imply an impending visit or invasion from the Makers?
Moore would probably not be happy with today's Q&A, she thought.
Not directly, no, Schulz replied. However, to answer the last half of the previous question, you'd put the device on a random asteroid so that only a spacefaring species could activate it. To answer this question, you'd then program the trap to phone home the first chance it got.
Schulz grinned.
Then, maybe, we'd get a visit.
Oh, he definitely won't be happy.
Narang decided to deliver this revelation personally. The fireworks would be epic. Admiral Moore's eyes seemed about to pop right out of his head. Narang kept her face impassive, but she was embarrassed to realize that she was enjoying his discomfiture.
So you're saying Pritchard might try to contact whoever sent this thing?
It's just speculation on Dr. Schulz's part, Admiral, and it doesn't speak to motive or consequences, even if it turns out to be reality. This could be an anthropological exercise, for all we know. Studying the natives.
Moore snorted, his expression showing clearly how little he believed that. He changed the subject abruptly.
I understand you've been subject to some hacking attempts.
Narang decided to be candid.
Well, not here so much. We're using your network, of course, but headquarters? Yes. Fortunately, we have some of the most sophisticated security AIs in the solar system.
Drawbridge category?
Moore asked. At her nod, he continued.
Doctor, don't get too complacent. They'll keep at it until they get what they want, or until it becomes irrelevant, which would mean things have gotten much worse.
Narang paused to rub her eyes. Too many days with not enough sleep were catching up with her.
I understand, Admiral, but everything we've seen so far indicates that this is not a Grey Goo scenario.
What about alien invasion?
Moore smiled tightly.
Depends on how you define invasion, I guess.
Narang stood.
Anyway, you have everything we've learned so far. Happy reading.
She gave him a nod and walked out. Bentley tried to catch her eye as she stepped past his desk, but she needed sleep more than she needed another conversation.
32. Status.
Admiral Moore blew on his coffee, then took a sip. The habitual action gave him an opportunity to look around the table without being obvious about it. He still didn't have a good feel for the positions of the various committee members, or, he admitted to himself, maybe those attitudes were shifting faster than he could get a handle on them. It seemed every day brought some new revelation about this Pritchard and his disease. He put his cup down and rapped on the table with his knuckles. Conversations ceased as everyone turned to him. Moore gave the committee members a pro forma smile.
I have received a request, or perhaps that's not the right word, since she's not asking for permission, from Dr. Narang for us to bring some more people into the project. We have a cybernetics expert, a xenobiologist, a couple of physicists, as well as some medical specialists whose fields I'm not sure I can even pronounce. And that won't set off flags at all, no, sir.
Admiral Castillo muttered.
Well, this situation isn't really top secret, Alan.
Moore shrugged.
The media picked it up the moment the ICDC dispatched a team spaceward. It's well past the rumor stage now and well into scandal. We're able to play the patient confidentiality card to a large extent, plus the ongoing investigation narrative, but some media pundits are getting pretty bold in their criticisms and pointed questions.
He paused and looked around the table.
And security has reported hacking attempts are up several 1,000%.
Several heads jerked around to look directly at Moore. He let the moment play out to maximum effect. Best they understand early the seriousness of the situation.
All this, based on an ICDC mobilization, that seems excessive.
Commodore Gerard said.
I agree, Mike,
Moore replied with a tight smile.
It's possible there is or has been a leak of some kind. We're looking into that. It's fortunate that when the Mad Astra returned early, they didn't publicly announce their intention to do so. As far as public records show, the Astra is still out there checking asteroids for another 2 months, which means anyone attempting to extract information by data mining will discount it as a possibility.
What exactly are we trying to keep from the public, Admiral?
Commodore Nevin phrased the question innocently enough, but there was a barb behind it, Moore was sure. Her eyebrows met in her trademark scowl.
Commodore, we have irrefutable proof of the existence of intelligent life outside of Earth. E.T., if you will. You don't think that's going to cause a stir?
Oh, no argument on that, Admiral. But is it really our place to play nanny to the world?
It is our place, Moore replied, to avoid vomiting out sensational news until those whose job it is to do so can package it up properly. I'm not suggesting we keep it a secret. I'm suggesting that how the news breaks will affect how it's received and how the public reacts.
Commodore Nevin snorted but held her tongue.
Anyway,
Moore continued, looking around the table,
unless someone can come up with a reason I can't block Dr. Narang's request. Anyone?
Silence greeted him.
Well, that's that, he thought.
Moore grimaced as he watched the news show Topic Zero on his tablet. The lead reporter, an obnoxious former sports star turned vid personality, stood outside ICDC headquarters going through the standard cliched innuendos and leading questions. The bottom line, though, was that someone had seen the list of ICDC draftees and put two and two together. And, as usual with the media, gotten five. Now, smelling blood, the media had laid siege to the ICDC. Moore watched a replay of the interview with Dr. Karin Lakkonen. The woman was an expert at not giving away anything, but the challenge had just encouraged the media vultures.
Dr. L, the ICDC's withholding of information on the quarantine is the direct cause of the demonstrations outside. Isn't it better at this time to simply come clean on the situation?
Sir, the problem isn't so much with ICDC not releasing information that we don't have, as it is with the media trying to fill that void with irresponsible conjecture and innuendo.
But, Doctor, isn't it true that you have an alien pathogen isolated on a Navy moon base?
No, sir, it is not. And, by the way, that kind of leading question when talking into the camera is exactly what I'm referring to. You've descended into tabloid territory. So let me reiterate the only statement I can give you. The ICDC is still investigating. We have not yet established whether a quarantine is even necessary, but will not lift it until we've made that determination, out of an abundance of simple prudence. And we will release information as it becomes available, subject to privacy requirements.
But surely public safety trumps any privacy issues.
If that comes to pass, then we will release more information. At this point, there is no danger to the public, your irresponsible reporting notwithstanding.
Moore found himself feeling some sympathy for the woman. But she would have to get herself under better control. Letting them bait her was not productive. The media, of course, were past masters at whipping the public into a frenzy when it suited their agenda. It appeared the goal in this case was to put pressure on the government to put out some kind of information release. Meanwhile, demonstrations were increasingly turning into riots, and you could bet the media would deny any responsibility in the end. Moore checked his email again. He expected a query from Naval-Civilian Relations any minute. The ICDC protocols weren't a secret, and any idiot would be able to connect the dots to figure out where the mystery ship was being held. Nothing yet. There was still time to compose a response. Moore queried the status board for Dr. Narang's current location. Perhaps a face-to-face would help clarify things. Dr. Narang sat back and gazed at Moore over her mug of tea.
You're not suggesting lying to the public, are you, Admiral?
Come on, Doctor. You've worked for the ICDC for long enough to understand about controlling information. A core dump without some kind of plan will cause panic. People will be scared of a potentially uncontrollable disease. Other people will be scared about the imminent arrival of some kind of space invaders. And, of course, the xenophobes and religious extremists will have a fit.
Narang looked down at her mug for a few moments.
We don't have much yet, Admiral. We're still trying to characterize the active agent. We are more used to biological subjects, if you know what I mean.
Not for the first time, Moore wondered if the ICDC was really the right agency to be running this show.
I saw my boss's response on vid,
Narang continued,
and I'd agree that it's nothing but a stalling tactic. Someone will have to release an official statement, and I understand that we should cooperate. I'm just not sure we have anything of substance yet.
Fair enough, Doctor. Then let's see what your crew can put together that won't metaphorically throw gasoline on the fire.
Have you ever even seen gasoline, Admiral?
Moore smiled as he stood to leave.
Clichés die hard, Doctor.
33. Looking over his shoulder. Ivan kept glancing around his room. It was odd, but he felt like he wasn't alone. Clearly he was, but the feeling wouldn't go away that someone was in the room with him. It was creepy. And the baby bear kept popping up in his mind, but now there were also images of strange, unfamiliar creatures, always in chrome. So, possibilities. One, he was losing his mind. Maybe the conversion wasn't perfect and he was unraveling. Or maybe the conversion was fine and he was just unraveling all on his own. Or, two, the isolation was getting to him. Well, that was just one B, really. Okay, two, something or someone actually was watching him. Of course, the surveillance camera up in the ceiling was an obvious candidate, but this was more than just that. Was something in his head with him? The creep factor would be off the charts in that case. There were other weird things as well. He'd found himself on several occasions turning on the vid without meaning to. One time, he'd spontaneously reopened his astronomy course notes and turned to a picture of the Briggs Farside Radio Telescope Array. Well, okay, it was impressive, but so what? Ivan glanced up at the surveillance camera. He still wasn't entirely comfortable with not mentioning any of this. After all, he wasn't a prisoner, technically, and this wasn't an adversarial situation. And Captain Jennings' tactic with the lawyers ensured that Ivan could expect full UEN citizenship protections. Still, it was lonely in quarantine. The doctors were all business. Calls to the rest of the crew tended to be, well, stiff was the kindest word Ivan could think of. Seth tried more than most, but even he was unsure how to deal with the chrome man. Conversations with his family helped, but he didn't want to overdo that. It wasn't just a question of the emotional toll on them. The more contact he had with his family, the more chance there was for someone to find out something. A chance comment by his children, a conversation overheard, a hack of the phone system, a fishing expedition by some news crew eavesdropping on the homes of random miners. Ivan smiled to himself. Most paranoid wins. He was certainly leading that race these days. Ivan needed to be seen as human, as a victim, not as a dangerous alien thingamabob. Revelations about alien mind parasites, involuntary actions, and spontaneous mental imagery probably wouldn't help his cause. So, caution. He wouldn't do anything to endanger his family. But that didn't mean he was going to volunteer to get tossed under the bus.
Mr. Pritchard?
Ivan looked up. It was Dr. Narang. She was one of the good ones. Too many of the doctors looked at him and just saw a specimen. He'd given up on trying to engage those individuals in any kind of conversation. He was struck once again by her beauty, and even more by her casual lack of concern about it. Judy was like that. The thought of his wife brought a stab of anxiety, and he forced himself to shift mental gears.
What's up, Dr. Narang?
We need another scraping, if you don't mind.
You've already gone through the last batch? Dr. Narang shrugged on the other side of the glass.
Many of our tests are destructive, and we're being aggressive to try to get as much information as possible. So, yeah, we go through them pretty fast.
Okay, Doc, no problem. Ivan got up and put his arm in the sleeve that they'd set up. There was a snap, and he felt a bite. Dr. Narang looked at something below the window level and said,
Good. Done. That doesn't hurt too much, does it?
Ivan shook his head.
Things don't hurt, generally. Not in the same way as before. It's more like data.
I know it's pain, I know it means damage is occurring, and I should do something, but it doesn't have the same urgency. Dr. Narang smiled.
There's a documented form of brain damage that produces that particular result, but I doubt it's the same thing.
She sat down at the console, leaned forward, and rested her chin on her hands.
Do you feel different? In any specific large-scale way, you must notice something.
Ivan thought for a few moments.
Well, I'm not sleeping anymore, but you knew that. That part is really weird. I keep realizing with a start that it's past my bedtime or something, but I'm not sleepy.
He grinned. I'm going through my computer courses a lot faster. A 24-hour day does have its upsides.
Can you read faster? Process better?
Hard to tell from the inside, of course, but mostly... No, I still forget stuff. Still have to go back and reference things.
Whether or not I'm still Ivan, I still work like Ivan, and I guess that includes fallible human memory.
Do you get tired?
Not the way you mean, I think, but I do get bored, so I have to change tasks every once in a while.
Narang nodded, and the silence stretched for several seconds.
How's the research going?
Ivan was intensely interested in progress, of course, but he also wanted to keep the doctor around as long as possible.
We are learning more about what we can't do than what we can, Ivan. For one thing, we can't get the nanites to infect anything. Virus, bacteria, flatworms, mice, toasters.
Toasters?
I kid, slightly. But we've tried placing them on and in various types of equipment, and they just aren't interested. They immediately start migrating back in your direction. Or trying to.
I'm afraid I don't have any insights there, Doc.
Ivan shrugged. It's not like I'm calling to them.
I understand. I'm going to get back to work, Ivan. We've got people waiting for this batch of beasties.
She nodded to him, then turned and headed up the hall. Ivan sighed and turned back to his room. Why this particular conversation would have caused it, Ivan had no idea. But now, for the first time, he really understood that he would not be going home. He couldn't. His mind flashed back to dog piles on the couch, barbecues on the ratty little balcony, and evenings at the park, holding Judy while the kids ran around screaming. And once more, he wished he could still cry.
34. Unrest. Protests continue to spread, fueled by rumors of an alien disease at one of the LaGrange naval bases. Our requests for interviews with ICDC and Navy representatives were again refused. The ICDC continues to repeat its official narrative that there is no disease under study, alien or otherwise. Navy Relations responds to all questions with the statement that they provide facilities only, and any inquiries should be directed to the ICDC. The representative for East Canada District and Northwest America District have issued a joint statement condemning WorldGov's apparent refusal to force an inquiry.
Ivan watched the transplanetary news report with a slight smile. So far, no one had actually lied. If you set the bar low enough, that is. The big fear seemed to be the gray goo scenario. That recent movie hadn't helped, of course. The Centaurus scourge had primed the public with the idea of alien nanites coming in and eating everything. He wondered if the producers were happy with the free publicity. Or maybe already in hiding. Shooting the messenger was a time-honored tradition, after all. The image on the vid changed to what looked very much like a riot. Civilians, many of them wearing bandanas, or even gas masks, carried signs and marched on a line of riot police. The picture changed to what was evidently another demonstration of some kind, then another.
Demonstrations turned to riots in six major cities today as various factions protested apparent government inaction, or at least government failure to respond as those factions demand. These different groups, united only in their distrust of the official releases...
Wow. New York, Athens, Geneva, Berlin. These weren't third world cities. Pausing the picture periodically, Ivan was able to zoom in and read some of the signs and placards. It appeared to be about a third religious themed, a third government conspiracy themed, and a third everything else. He let the vid reset to real time as he pondered. There didn't seem to be anything new out there in terms of the public knowing something they shouldn't, at least not anything that could be put into a few words. But the level of panic was being fed by something, and it would continue to spread. Ivan hoped his family had found a new, safer location. 35. Screaming. Ivan sat up with a start. If he had still been capable, he would have broken out into a sweat. He was sure he'd just heard a scream of fear or pain, or both, and the really odd thing was that it had sounded like his voice. Had it been a nightmare? But he couldn't even fall asleep. He glanced up at the security camera, then stood and looked down the hallway through the observation window. No one was coming, so no one else had heard the scream. Ivan sat down, shaking his head. This probably came under the heading of things not to mention. This hadn't felt like whoever was looking over his shoulder, though. So, did Ivan have multiple guests in his head? I am Legion. Great. Well, one upside at least. This kept his mind off his family and his future. Assuming he had one. So, items. One. He had an invisible friend looking over his shoulder, one who possibly moved Ivan's limbs for him occasionally. Two, he had another tenant who was a screamer and sounded a lot like Ivan. Three, he'd developed an unexplainable hate for dishwasher mechs. Maybe it was professional jealousy, since he seemed to be a mech now. Sort of. Ivan felt the bones of one hand with the other, pressing his fingers aggressively into the, flesh. Dr. Kemp had really freaked out when he'd done that. Ivan wasn't a doctor, but he was pretty sure the skeletal structure of his hand was different from when he was human. He wasn't sure if that should be surprising or not. With a sample size of one, he couldn't really form much in the way of conclusions about how metal men should be made. Perhaps it was time to try digging into what was happening in his skull. If there was someone or something else in there, he might be able to contact it. Maybe it had been trying to contact him, and that was a scream of frustration. If so, it had a temper. Ivan lay down on the bed, hands behind his head, stared at the ceiling and tried to relax. Images began to form, of strange creatures parading through his view, all in chrome, like him. Their physiologies ranged from mildly exotic to indescribable and even terrifying. Interestingly, these weren't mental images. They were actually projected in some way onto his field of view. That meant that someone was trying to communicate. Was it the screamer or the watcher? Not enough info yet. Ivan tried to relax and just take in the show. Understanding would come later. He was watching the news when it happened again. A mental scream. Agony, fear, something. And although he still wasn't sure how to explain it, it sounded like him. It was followed by a jolt of something. Anger? No. Maybe frustration. Irritation. The images were getting more frequent as well. Indescribable creatures with different numbers of limbs, eyes, and even heads, including Zero, which was especially weird, and all in chrome, except, strangely, the bear cub, which was always the last image in the group. Then another image. Ivan, this time, chrome and all. As he watched, the Ivan image became two, then three, then four. One at a time,
The duplicates screamed and disappeared, leaving the original Ivan image.
Well, that's interesting.
Whatever else this might be, it was communication. Or an attempt, anyway. One of the occupants in Ivan's brain appeared to be trying to explain the screams. Again, the images of Ivan went through the sequence. Cloning, screaming, and disappearing.
It's making copies of me.
Then, torturing them? Not likely.
Okay, Ivan, you're a computer geek. You were top of your class. Time to make use of that nerd foo.
Then a third time, but this time with a change. Several clone images screamed and disappeared, but some stayed. Then the ones remaining were cloned. This was repeated for several cycles. Then all vanished, except one.
It's using an evolutionary process or some kind of simulated annealing to something, to build communications? The screams, those are versions of me that failed. Maybe failure is catastrophic?
That was interesting, but there was implied information there as well. For this process to work, for the host to be able to duplicate him and run multiple instances, Ivan had to be running as a virtual machine on top of some other computing layer. So there was a computer, for want of a better word, hosting Ivan, and therefore, a lot more in his head than just him. Scary thought. It meant Ivan was not the owner of his own body, but a tenant. A guest. And he could be suspended, or even deleted. Best be polite to the landlord. Ivan carefully watched the video of a computer being disassembled. This was the third run-through, which he hoped would clue in his host to pay attention. As soon as the video finished, Ivan lay down on the bed to stare at the ceiling. This was his signal that he was waiting for communications. Within moments, an image appeared. Ivan recognized it as one of the nanites that Dr. Kemp and Chief Engineer McNeil had identified. As he watched, the nanite was joined by others of its kind. Then the image zoomed in on one particular nanite scrolling inward until the edges of the nanite were off-screen, so to speak. An image of a CPU and memory modules from Ivan's video appeared, overlaid on the nanite's innards. Then the picture zoomed out to show that every nanite had the same parts.
Oh, wow. Alien Computers 101, I'm getting a guided tour.
The first takeaway was that there wasn't any kind of centralized processing. Each nanite contained a full computer system, which meant everything ran on a distributed network. There was no brain as such. Ivan might not even be, strictly speaking, in his own head anymore. The train of images continued, becoming more and more detailed and less comprehensible. Ivan quickly realized that Lesson 2 was going to involve new technology, if not outright new physics. This could take a while.
36. Discussion. Dr. Kemp had been dozing off when his phone rang. He sat up and grabbed it. Kemp?
Hi, Doc. You busy?
It took Kemp a moment to recognize the voice, with the sleep fog still making his thoughts fuzzy. Finally, it clicked.
Oh. Hi, Ivan. What's up?
Well, last time we talked, you said to let you know if things came into focus, or if things changed.
Okay. Of course, I'm not really in charge of your care anymore, but I'm still interested.
That's okay, Doc. I think I'm just looking for a familiar voice. The ICDC doctors are all business, all the time. I'm a specimen to them.
They've never known you as a human, Ivan. They probably aren't quite sure how to deal with you.
Well, maybe. Although I get the feeling they're all about the disease and not so much about the patient.
Could be, but that's their job.
There was a chuckle on the other end, followed by a short silence.
I found my wife.
How did that go?
I wish I actually had a fatal disease, Doc. At least then I could say goodbye properly. I could explain to her what's happening to me. This, This just leaves me hanging. No resolution. I almost wish I hadn't made the call.
There was a moment of silence.
I've talked to her several times since, but I've got nothing new to offer. And there's no resolution that I can see. I might as well be lingering in a coma in a hospital bed. I'm no use to her. I'm making her life hell, and I'm keeping her from having a life.
Kemp nodded, silent. He'd been around for too many deaths, watched too many family members trying to wrap their minds around the abrupt passing of a loved one. He'd also seen too many instances of people being given bad news, something lingering, something with an indefinite conclusion some time in the future. Persistent comas, dementias, cancers, neurological degenerative diseases, all ultimately death sentences. In some ways, that was worse. Ivan moved to fill the conversation gap.
I heard the Consolidated Industrial Ship confirmed all details of the claim.
Yep. Escrow's been removed. Funds are released. We're all rich, including your family. Captain Jennings asked his lawyers to make sure it got taken care of properly.
Good. I'll have to thank him if I talk to him. If I don't get a chance, let him know I appreciate it, okay?
Will do. The conversation ground to a halt, as tended to happen with people who weren't at ease with each other. After a moment, Kemp said,
Anyway, Ivan, what were you going to tell me about?
I'm starting to know stuff.
Huh?
You know all the tip-of-the-tongue stuff that I couldn't put my finger on? Some of it's starting to gel.
Okay, that's interesting. So, the nanites are telling you things?
Sort of. There's a computer in here with me, or an AI. It's sort of both and neither one. I'm running as a program.
You're what?
I'm a program. Or an emulation. I guess that shouldn't be a surprise, really. There isn't a human brain in here, and Ivan Pritchard was an entity who grew up on a specifically wired set of biologically based neurons. The computer, or whatever it is, simulates the human brain, neuron for neuron, impulse for impulse, and there I am. Possibly with some improvements, since I don't need to sleep anymore. This is pretty standard AI stuff. I mean, I'm sure this version is way more advanced, but the basics are the same as what we learned in computer science classes.
Okay, but the bottom line is, you're still you.
Yes. I'm not a computer pretending to be Ivan. I'm Ivan. I'm just not running on wetware anymore.
Well, that's good, right?
I think so. I get the impression it might be temporary. I can't explain why.
Ouch. Can't you ask the computer?
It doesn't really work that way. There isn't a conversation going on. It's more like information is leaking my way. I think the computer is still figuring out how to communicate. And since the human brain is a dog's breakfast of emergent properties, it's slow going. The computer can't afford to break something in the process. It's doing simulations, making copies of me, then trying to modify them for communications. Not going well so far, though.
How is the computer able to handle that? How powerful is it, anyway?
Pretty damn powerful, Doc. I'm getting computer-related stuff faster than anything else because of my background, I guess. The computer system seems to encode information directly on the fabric of space at the Planck level. In principle, it could encode the state of every particle in the known universe in a cubic micrometer of vacuum. Of course, processing all that data is another matter. No matter how you shuffle it, light speed delay is a limiting factor, and that's the trouble it's having with me. Apparently, humans are extraordinarily messy.
Will you be able to talk to the computer at some point?
I think so. I hope so. I'll want to ask it if it can make me human again.
37. Enemy threats. Moore settled into what he privately called his command chair, took a sip of his coffee. Nothing beat the first sip from the first cup of the day, and picked up the briefing notes from Bentley. One of the advantages of a personal assistant was that you didn't have to wade through the news channels and all your emails to figure out what was critical and what could be ignored. As he read the first item, his eyes widened and he almost choked. Multiple news items about the quarantine, not all details correct, but enough to suspect a leak.
Oh, great God in heaven. Bentley!
The lieutenant appeared within seconds. He'd probably been anticipating the call.
First item, summary, please.
Bentley took a breath and began.
Multiple news stories appeared overnight with concrete details about the Astra and the crew, enough accurate hits to make it more than conjecture. Enough similarities between the stories to indicate that someone sold the story multiple times.
Reaction?
About what you'd expect, sir. Public hue and cry. Demands that the government do something. A couple of demonstrations already.
Anything from HQ?
Bentley shook his head.
Not yet, sir, but I am expecting...
The ringing of an incoming call interrupted him. Moore recognized it as the ringtone Bentley had assigned to Naval Intelligence.
Get that, Bentley. Update me afterward.
Bentley nodded and sprinted to his desk. Moore picked up the cheat sheet, hoping the next item would distract him from Bentley's single-sided conversation. Before he could get properly rolling, Bentley was back in front of him holding out a printout.
Ted, I don't know what kind of clusterfuck you guys have underway up there, but the politicos are going apeshit. We have a directive. Direct from the office of the President of the United Earth Nations to provide all pertinent information. It takes something truly extraordinary to unite the entire peanut gallery, but this has absolutely everyone, from the loony left to the environmentalists to the fundies to the rabid right screaming for blood. The President can't ignore that large a united front, which means Naval Command can't either. There will be a formal request for more information coming in a short time. Suggest you don't try to stall or dissemble. George Fredericks, Admiral, SSC UENN.
Moore looked at Bentley with one eyebrow raised. The lieutenant had a gray cast to his skin that Moore found disquieting.
Something else, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir. Just heard it on the office wire.
The SSE has announced that they are sending a flotilla to LaGrange 4 Naval Base to inspect and evaluate the threat. Dr. Narang looked like she'd been struck with a club. Moore waited a moment to be satisfied with the effect. She needed a dose of reality, and this might just be a kick in the right direction.
You aren't going to cooperate, Admiral, are you?
Of course not. Imagine us letting a foreign military march into our territory while we bow and scrape and say yes, sir, and no, sir, and please, sir. I'd be court-martialed, at minimum, and rightly so.
He hesitated for a moment, wondering if he should soft-pedal his next point, then decided not to.
If the Sino-Soviet Empire forces the issue, there will be a battle. They are sending a full flotilla, and we don't have the hardware in place to hold them off. So, if push comes to shove, we won't be surrendering. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Narang nodded slowly.
To the death. Ours, if it comes to that.
That is correct, Doctor. Please relay to your staff as appropriate.
12 SSE warships, including 2 full destroyers, stood at zero relative motion in the monitor. Facing them were 9 UENN frigates and 1 cruiser. It was a David and Goliath moment, and Moore had no illusions about the outcome, if things went bad. The voice of the SSE flotilla commander, one Captain Chekhov, came over the monitor.
You have insufficient forces to hold us at bay, Admiral. I suggest you step aside and accept the inevitable. You cannot win.
Moore set his jaw.
We don't have to win, Commander. We just have to make sure that you don't win. This is not a symmetrical situation. In the worst case, we will blow up our assets rather than surrendering them. and if we can hold you off until the UENN strike group that we both know is coming gets here, so much the better.
Destroying yourselves will remove this supposed alien threat. How is that a loss for us?
Which might or might not remove this supposed alien threat, Commander. Without anything left to study, you won't know. And you'll have a war on your hands in any case. You may have the advantage here today, but you know as well as I do that the UENN has you outmatched overall.
I know no such thing, Admiral. That is your opinion only.
Have it your way, Commander. Your choices remain unchanged, as do ours.
There were several seconds of silence. One of the monitoring techs commented, "Radio reflections from local dust, sir. It's probably a tight beam signal. They're phoning home for orders."
Moore nodded. "Noted. How long until reinforcements get here?"
3 hours, sir. They're on emergency deployment protocol. All personnel cocooned for high acceleration.
Moore knew that particular tactic always resulted in a certain number of permanent disabilities. Those would be on the heads of the SSE military and ultimately on whoever was responsible for this situation. He was keeping score, and if someone needed to pay, he'd make sure it happened. A stab of pain in his jaw made him realize he was losing control of his reactions. Deliberately relaxing his features, Moore turned and addressed the room.
"You have your orders. It is a given that we can't blink in this scenario. You accepted the possibility of death when you signed up."
A voice from the monitor interrupted Moore, causing him again to grit his teeth in irritation.
"Damn it! I've been working on that speech for years."
"As an alternative, Admiral, we would be satisfied with an embedded SSE observer."
"That would not be a military decision, Commander, therefore it's not one that I can make. You'd have to go through diplomatic channels on that."
"So is that a no?"
"That's a maybe, Commander. Convince my bosses."
"Very well. We will spare you the embarrassment of defeat at this time, Admiral, but should the danger from this experiment of yours become intolerable to the people of the solar system, rest assured, we will act decisively. Meanwhile, my people will talk to your people."
Moore took a moment to roll his eyes.
"Fine, Commander, just make sure your lurking remains outside of our treaty zone. Out."
Moore made a throat-slash motion and the technician ended the connection. It was a reprieve of sorts, but not a resolution by any stretch. Moore looked around the table. Serious expressions gazed back at him. No one had any illusions about the situation.
"According to surveil, the SSE fleet has parked themselves at 100,000 kilometers plus 1 meter distance."
"More or less," Castillo said. Moore ignored him.
"They're sending a message. If the political winds shift, or if things go unshiny here for whatever reason, they'll be back."
"Which could happen. Have you seen the news lately?"
Nevin looked around.
"A coalition of representatives is pushing for a vote of non-confidence."
"Worrying, but it wouldn't affect us directly,"
Gerard added.
"It affects Naval High Command, and the fallout will inevitably run downhill, Commodore. I'm not so concerned about the direct orders as I am about the backroom deals."
Moore scanned the table one more time.
"Sirs, we are living in interesting times. If you have back-channel contacts, now would be a good time to renew acquaintances."
38. Investigations and Discoveries. Narang watched over the shoulder of the technician as he retuned the AQRI. They had managed to encase a nanite in a plastic resin without breaking it and without giving it a chance to start eating the resin. This was the real reason why they went through so many nanites, trying to get one to stay still without turning it into a random pile of atoms or incinerating it, had achieved the status of a never-ending game of whack-a-mole. Finally, success. And a chance to look inside.
While one group had been trying to get a suitably prepared specimen, another group had prepared a series of scanning scripts in the event of success. Now they would have the opportunity to test their work. The technician turned to Narang.
Third series started. First two went without a hitch. The nanite is still radiating virtual particles, so it's still alive